Good afternoon and welcome. I'm Dennis Galecki. Welcome to the 336th Imagine Lecture. Been going for 10 years, since December of 2009. This is put together by the Center for the Study of Art, Architecture, History, and Nature. The first Tuesdays of every month, we cover art and creativity with two different videos and speakers. The second Tuesday around architecture design. The third, this one, around history. How do we look back so we can better imagine and look forward? And then finally, the fourth Tuesday is around nature and science. And they alternate so that this series will continue around Tocqueville in 2 months. This is February, the third week of February, so figure the third week of April if you're interested in this particular series. All right, so the paper yesterday said that Bruce Fisher would be here. My announcements were that Bruce Fisher was here, going to be here, and then suddenly Bruce Fisher found out he couldn't be here just this early, late morning rather, and sent in a pretty interesting substitute to talk for Bruce Fisher on a slightly different subject, but I think you will find it very compelling. Fred Floss is the chair the Department of Economics and Finance at SUNY Buffalo State College, and a senior fellow of the Fiscal Policy Institute. He currently serves on the Buffalo Control Board, and he's also the chair of the Center for Economics and Public Policy at Buffalo State. It's nice when people can take the time to be flexible enough to help Bruce Fisher out. But let's give a warm welcome to Fred Floss. I will mention, I will put some handouts. There's not enough for everybody. Oh, you put them out there and they're gone. Thank you.
And I'll apologize for that. I didn't know how many people were coming and just printed up a couple just in case. My name's Fred Floss. And I've been at Buffalo State now for 36 years, and I'll just let you know how this all sort of happened. Bruce got caught in a snowstorm up in Canada and was supposed to be back and said, can you do something? So this is something that I had been working on that we had started to talk to a number of reporters in Buffalo. And the question that they asked was, why are all of the businesses in Western New York closing? And I said, well, that's sort of an interesting question, right? Why would all of, you know, is the economy falling apart? What's going on? So I went and I actually said, maybe we should look at the data before we assume that we're going out of business and we should all leave now. And it turns out that, in fact, this idea that we have that we're closing and going out of business and not doing very well is a myth, which is good for all of us, I think. Because the idea, very simply, is that while things change and companies come and go, Buffalo's still growing. And in fact, Buffalo's doing better in a lot of ways than a lot of the rest of the country and a lot of upstate New York. So this was sort of an idea of putting together some things so that when people tell you that Buffalo's falling apart, you'll have a little bit better idea of putting that into perspective and thinking about, well, what should we do in Buffalo? Can we afford to have the Albright Knox? Can we afford to have the Birchfield Penny if we're talking about art? If we're talking about nature, can we have the Science Museum and pay for it? Or are these things luxuries that we can't afford? So hopefully I'll figure out how to use this. Let's start to look at, it's been 10 years since the Great Recession of 2008. And in fact, Buffalo has come out of it pretty well, but let's ask some questions. Is Buffalo growing? Are we stagnating? Are we falling apart? And if so, where are we growing? What are we doing? And how do we compare? How do we compare to the rest of the country, to New York State? and to other big cities in upstate New York so that we have an idea of where we are and what we're doing. So let's think about some different ways to talk about it. The first one is just to look how much money are we producing. That, in economics terms, is called the gross domestic product. Okay? And all that means is, how much stuff are we making here in Buffalo? So are we making more or are we making less? What about wages? Are wages doing better or are they doing worse? And then finally, employment. And that's traditionally what we look at. Are we creating more jobs or are we creating less jobs? The problem with employment is if we create a bunch of minimum wage jobs, that might not be as good as creating a few less jobs, but making sure that they're all higher income jobs. And then finally, at the end, I'll talk a little bit about minimum wage and what the impacts of the minimum wage law has been over the last 2 years and give you maybe some things to think about there as well. So I thought I'd have a bigger screen, so I apologize. So let me just talk a little bit about where are we growing? Where is our gross domestic product growing? Well, and if we look up here and we look at the top and we see that yellow, that's finance.
Okay.
That's finance. So we're growing and producing more and more money in our banks, in our financial institutions, in our insurance companies and all of them. And if you look at it, that grew about, if we look at it, 50% since 2001. Okay? So about the last 20 years, we've grown almost 50% in finance. We've grown in education and healthcare services, and in, let's see what the blue one is. The blue one is retail. Okay? So this idea that we're losing all of our jobs and not making any money here is true. The green line, though, I want to point out to you, and that's manufacturing. Okay? So the one area where we're losing jobs, that green line, where we have less jobs than we have than we had before, is manufacturing. And when we look at that and we start to think about this, we're down about 20% in manufacturing. Now, a little bit later, I'm going to show you what happened in other places in New York and other places in the country. They're down by a lot more. So when we talk about production and growth, we're down a little bit in manufacturing, but we're still relatively large in manufacturing. And for those that are looking in today's dollars, we're producing about $51 billion today in Buffalo and Niagara Falls. So that's not a bad part. That's about the same percentage of the United States economy as we were in 2001. So while the economy's growing and we hear about, you know, the South growing faster and everything else, we're still keeping up. And that's an interesting thing to see. Yep.
The red line on the bottom.
The red line on the bottom. The red line on the bottom is food and drinking.
And that, I noticed, had a good percentage increase since 2009. Especially.
It did. So if you look since the recession, food and drinking and bars and all of those good things seem to have gone up. And we're back to where we were in 2001. So true, that area isn't growing, but it's not contracting, and there's a really good reason for that. The population is stayed the same. So if you're not growing, you don't need any more restaurants, right? Some restaurants may come, some restaurants may go, but our economy only says there's so many restaurants. Now, I used to drive back and forth every week from Albany. And there's another reason we don't grow in restaurants like everybody else. If you go anywhere else to large cities, Albany's a great example, they eat out 7 nights a week. no one knows how to cook, and when you go into their grocery store, they think that Wonder Bread and French's mustard are the only two things you need to have in a store to survive, and maybe bologna. They have no idea of how to cook for themselves. It's an amazing thing. And the other thing is, they almost always only have chain restaurants. So when you go to Albany the next time, look around, you'll see that I'm right. I would much rather be here and eat here. And I'll give you one story about that. We had a big convention of about 10,000 teachers come to Buffalo. And we brought them all in, and they were complaining and grousing about the whole thing. And they didn't want to come, and they're from New York City and Long Island and all over the state. And they got here, and about after the first night, they went out to have dinner. They had a bottle of wine. They looked at all of this stuff, and the next morning voted to come back the next year. Okay? So you can tell that we do a lot better than a lot of different places when we start to look at all of that. But we're not really losing jobs. So if we think about some of this stuff, we can start to see one other thing. Or a couple of things. One, finance has grown from 15 to about 20% of our economy now. Remember I was telling you it was growing? But if we want to talk about what's the composition of our economy, finance is becoming much more important to our economy. The other thing that we've seen is that manufacturing has shrunk to about 14% when it was 19%. So in other words, finance and manufacturing have flipped. Okay? An interesting thing to talk about, we can talk about how finance probably doesn't pollute as much as manufacturing, but I'll leave that for when we get to the science week in all of this. But the reality you should realize is that Buffalo is still a manufacturing hub because in the rest of the country, most other large cities are about 8% of their economy is in manufacturing. So we're still almost double what other cities have in manufacturing. And when I say cities, I mean Erie and Niagara counties. So I use those interchangeably. The other thing that you hear about New York is a big government state, that we spend a lot of money on government, whether it's state or local or even federal. The interesting part is that the federal government actually has started to decline, so we don't get as much money and as much money back in Western New York as we used to from our taxpayers with people getting jobs here. But the other thing that started to happen under not this Governor Cuomo, but the last Governor Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo, is that New York State started as a percentage of the economy to decline, and really by the end of the first Cuomo administration, after about 8 years, we now have the same amount of government as almost any of the other states. So that this idea that New York and that Buffalo has a lot of government really doesn't hold up when we look at how much of taxpayer dollars we're spending anymore. And in fact, we spend about the same as most other states, and we've dropped from being about 18% to about 15%. And the interesting part is that smaller states have to spend a lot bigger percentage of their economy because they still have to provide the bigger services. So if we want to have government be even smaller than it is today, the reality is what we need to do is grow the economy more. Because we still have to plow the streets, we still have to make sure we have clean water, we still make sure that we have those electrified trolleys that Bruce Fisher was going to talk about, and all of the other things that we have here. So if we look at all of that and we start to think about it, these are some of the things to start to think and look about. Well, let's move on and talk about jobs and industry and employment and see what's going on now. Well, here's my first comparison if you want to look at it. And this is all of the jobs in Western New York that aren't on farms. Why? Because that's how the federal government counts it. Why did they worry about farms and not farms? Because back in 1929, when they started this, farms were important. So they cut them out and did their own thing with farms. Today, farms are relatively small. And what are the three different colors here? Well, the gray color is the time period from 1990 to 2018. Okay? So that's our long term, how much have we grown? And that's about 20%. Now, the interesting part is that the red one, the top one if you see there, that's what happened from 2008 to 2018. So that's the last 10 years. So what we really want to know is, are we growing faster before the recession or after the recession, right? And what's happening in different places? Well, in New York State, we're growing faster. The red line is bigger than the blue line. Okay? So we're doing better after the Great Recession than we were doing before that. Then we can look at Albany. Albany is doing pretty well, and we can talk about why, but if you look at reverse, Albany's doing worse than it was before the Great Recession. So it was growing faster, and the Great Recession had a bigger toll on their economy than it did in New York State. Poor Binghamton. Binghamton has lost. Luckily, it's losing a little bit slower. But even last month, Binghamton is the only metropolitan area that's actually had a decline in their manufacturing jobs and in their employment. So Binghamton's still continuing to get smaller. Buffalo, Niagara Falls. We didn't grow quite as much as some of the others. We're a little bit bigger than Albany, so that's a little bit. But look at how much better we're doing compared to what we were doing before. Buffalo is really the big success story in New York coming out of the 2008 recession. So for whatever reason, as we look through everything, we're doing much better since then than almost anywhere else. New York City, again, has started to slow down, has started to grow, and is growing pretty fast. Rochester, you can see, is starting to slow down a little bit, and Syracuse, not much is happening.
So I'll leave our poor friends in Syracuse alone for today. But I was out there a few weeks ago talking with all of them. If you want to look at what industries are growing and not growing, the big green line is employment in the Buffalo SMA. And you can see, here's the recession. And we start to slowly grow, and we've started to grow. And we're about 5% more jobs than we were in 2008.
Okay.
But you can see up at the top, those are the two areas that are growing the fastest. And those are essentially education and health services and professional and business services, so lawyers.
Okay.
So we're growing at a faster rate than everything else there. The next two are, the middle one is finance. So that's finance is the blue line, and the red line is leisure and hospitality. And what we're seeing is leisure and hospitality is growing everywhere. New York City, for example, is a great example where they're getting nervous now that they're no longer going to have as many finance jobs as they have leisure and hospitality jobs, jobs in hotels, jobs in restaurants, things like that. And the dotted line, again, is manufacturing. And you can see that we've declined in manufacturing jobs. So it's not only GDP. It's not only the money we make in manufacturing, but it's also the number of jobs. And if you compare the dollar amounts and the percentage drop with the number of jobs that we lose, it's almost a one-for-one. So we've lost, you know, a large number of jobs, and we've lost a large amount of our manufacturing. And again, I want to point out, while that's true, we're still doing better than almost all the rest of the country, and we're still more a manufacturing hub than most places. Just to look at that, professional services and education have grown by 44% since 1990. Hospitality and leisure has grown by 26, and manufacturing's down almost by half in employment. So you can start to look at all of that. And that's since 1990. And why do I use 1990? I guess this is as good time as any to talk to you about that. Is we want to see what happens over a number of recessions. Are we coming back? Are we going down? Because if we look at everything going down for a couple of years, we forget that it comes back up. So we get a better idea here, and we get to see a little bit about what's going on if we look at a little bit longer picture of everything. So, wow, this is way too small for you to see. But this is the total number of jobs. And if you look in Buffalo just really simply, in manufacturing, we had about 90,000 manufacturing jobs. Today we have about 52,000. The interesting part is going and looking at Rochester. They had 123,000 manufacturing jobs, and they're down to 57,000. So while they were much bigger than us in manufacturing in 1990, with the closing of Kodak and Belch & Lomb and Xerox, they've really come down to look, from a manufacturing standpoint, as larger. And if you look at all of these cities, the big news is that other than Rochester, Buffalo has the highest concentration, the highest percentage of their economy in manufacturing. So Western New York, even though we're declining, manufacturing is still a really important part of what we do here. And again, it's about twice the size in percentages as the United States. Okay, what about wages? So we've talked about how much we make. We've talked about how many jobs there are. Well, are these good-paying jobs? Are they bad-paying jobs? What's going on? Can we see what's happening? And can we talk about this idea a little bit of Buffalo being the poorest city in the country? And let's look at a little bit of this. Here, what I've got is New York State is the first one in the light blue. The second one is Amherst, and then the third one with the big line is Buffalo. And if you notice, here's Buffalo. I forgot my thing. I'll go get it. Here we go. Here's Buffalo with a little red line around it. And you can see these are very high, and they go down to almost nothing. So less than 5% of the people in Buffalo make $200,000 or more. Okay? Less than 5. But 25% almost of the city of Buffalo is making less than $25,000 a year. And this is in 2010. Okay? So 35% of Buffalo. But if we go to Clarence, for example, only 3% of their population is making less than that. And anywhere else in the country, Clarence would be called Buffalo. Okay? Go to Detroit, go to Chicago, look at how they've been able to essentially include all of those areas. So when we're compared, we're comparing to our downtown Buffalo. So we're not comparing apples to apples and all of that. Well, okay, what do we see then? We see, and I put in here Amherst and Cheektowaga and Tonawanda, and you can see we have a relatively peak distribution where most people are around $50,000 to $75,000 a year in income. That's a lot different than the number that you'll hear when people talk about it
on television because they're only talking about the city of Buffalo, and they're saying that this number is somewhere around $30,000, $32,000. Well, what's happened since 2010? Well, now 31% of the city of Buffalo is making under $25,000. But before you get excited and say we're doing 4% better, you have to take inflation into account. And if we do, we're going to be back exactly where we are. So the real problem that we have, if we're starting to think about all of this, okay, is that, yes, we're in the city have a real question about how do we deal with those making less income. And we're in a much worse situation. We have almost twice the percentage of our population that are under $25,000 today than the rest of the state. So this becomes a real question of how do we deal with that. What's the federal government doing? What's our state government doing? How can we work to make sure that these people have a standard of living that we'd all accept? The other issue here is notice that these are people making income. So I'm not talking about people who don't have jobs. These are people who have jobs. They're in the workforce. Okay? 31% of the folks in the city of Buffalo that are in the workforce are making less than $25,000 a year. So we need to start to think about that, whereas in Clarence, it's 4%. And you can start to see the folks in Clarence are going to have a very different idea than the folks in the city of Buffalo. How do we bring everybody together and have a discussion to be able to try to fix this? Because that's going to allow Western New York to grow. Well, I did want to point out one other thing to you on wages as we go through all of this, is the red line is the United States, and you can see back we were growing at exactly the same rate as everyone else up until 2004. Well, what's that 2001, 2004? That's the recession we had during 9/11. So we took a hit during 9/11, even though we weren't in New York City, and then we've grown almost identically to all of that. So since 2001, wages have grown by 56% in the United States, and they've grown by about 53% in Western New York. So what does that mean? Well, the average person or the median person in the United States is making about $68,000, and the average person in Buffalo is making $61,000. But here's the really neat thing, and I didn't put this graph in because I haven't updated it yet. If you take into account the cost of living, and we look at it, we're doing as well, if not better, than almost everybody else because this is a relatively cheap place to live. So while we're making about $7,000 less, $6,000 less, the cost of living here means that we're living a lot better than that $6,000. And in fact, if you look at it, we're even doing better than the folks making about $80,000 in New York City. Because it costs so much more money to live in New York City. Okay? So, the other thing that started this, and you may remember that our mayor, Byron Brown, was the head of the commission that looked into minimum wage, particularly minimum wage for fast food workers and other people throughout the state. He made recommendations to raise the minimum wage, and they've been raised now twice in the last 2 years. So the question is, if we can look at those industries, did we lose a lot of jobs? Did we gain a lot of jobs in those industries that impacted minimum wage? Because if we did, then maybe the minimum wage isn't helping. If we didn't, then people on the bottom are getting more income. They haven't lost as many jobs. Then everybody should be better off.
we may be paying a little bit more money for our cheeseburger or whatever. And I don't go into that today, but we can look at it. Well, this is now monthly data, and this it gets back to talking to my reporters about what we've seen. The top number on the top is retail trade. That's a big minimum wage job. The green line is the economy. The red line on the bottom is leisure and hospitality, and you can see manufacturing. I just threw in so you can see what everybody else is doing. And notice what happens in the Buffalo area. Over the year, in January, it starts out low. It's snowing here. People aren't going out as much. You don't get as much as that. It comes way up into August, and then it starts to come down until it gets to January again. And then it goes back, and it does that again. So, but what we've seen over that 24, over those two minimum wage increases, is actually jobs increasing a little bit from peak to peak and from trough to trough. We're doing a little bit better. And while retail was down, it was down and then has now come back up and is following the same sort of trend, except in retail, you can see the bumps because of the holidays. Thanksgiving and Christmas when they hire more people and they put them up. So what does this say? When you're sitting and talking and watching your news channels, whether it's 2, 4, or 7, they love to talk about the decline in hospitality and leisure. Usually around September, October is when they call me and say, the world is ending, everybody's losing their jobs. You know? They never, and then they usually come, well, around now, right? Which is when they're saying, look at retail is dropping. Well, of course retail's dropping. The holidays are over. Okay? But from what we can see here, minimum wage really isn't impacting all that much on employment in Buffalo. And here's New York State as a whole, and you can see the same thing happens. Okay? And the little as we go through all of that. So it doesn't seem to be having very much of an impact. And I'll give you a little bit of a hint, is that most people were hiring above minimum wage before they raised the minimum wage, so that it didn't really impact as many people as possible. And that's sort of what we told Byron is, you can raise it. If you raise it to here, not very many people will do it, but it'll start to put a floor and move us back to where we were. So, it looks like we're growing. It looks like minimum wage is fine, but we'll still have to see in a couple of years whether or not the minimum wage has an impact on other people's wages and other people's jobs, and whether that 31% in the city of Buffalo starts to get smaller because now they're making more money because of the minimum wage increase. And you can start to see now why the mayor of the city of Buffalo might want to support a minimum wage increase, because that's 31% of the voters who would really like think that that's a good idea. So you can start to see where all of that's coming. Just as one last thing, another reporter asked me, and it was about Amazon and how it relates to Buffalo and everything. And here's the reality. As an economist, both sides are right. If you're Howard Zemsky or if you're Andrew Cuomo, I'm going to put in $3 billion. I'm going to get $27 billion out. That sounds like a good deal. Fine. You should do it. The other, what the folks in Long Island are saying, and Long Island and Queens are saying, is if you give me $3 billion, I can make more than $27 billion with this if you let me fix roads, invest in other companies, and do other things. That would be a good thing. They're right, too. The question is, do we have $6 billion or only $3 billion? Because if we had six, we could do both, right? And I think the argument is that we don't, so the question is, what do we do? And how is that related to Buffalo? And that's the same question we were asking as Tesla came here, right? Should we put the Buffalo billion, should we invest $1 billion into the Tesla plant and take the risks that are involved, or shouldn't we? Is it going to give us the wages and the employment that we're expecting or not? Forgetting about all the other things that happened that we don't want to talk about, right? And that's still an open question. But again, the governor isn't wrong. It should bring in another $3 or $4 billion to Buffalo on his $1 billion investment. That could be a good thing. The folks that are complaining, if you'd given me $1 billion to do other projects, I probably could have created at least the same amount as you putting the money into Tesla. We're never going to solve that issue. The only question for us in Western New York is, how do we get the most money here and then use it on projects that are going to have a positive return that helps us grow wages and everything else? So I know I'm longer than my 10 minutes I was supposed to talk, according to Bruce, so that you could all ask questions. So I will apologize and thank you for your patience.
Stay up there, Fred. Stay up there. Nope, not working. We're going to have to share a mic here.
Okay.
Well, let's play with this. Pressing it in. What else? It seems to be ready. All right, so we'll get some questions from the audience, but I'll sort of start with this one just to continue your mention of Tesla in lieu of the Amazon New York relationship. Doesn't your data help build a case for variation in upstate New York over the last several years?
Journalism for Engineers Week. Build a rocket and launch Curie George into space. Happening right now in the kids' space. Thank you.
Come on. you know, this program for you. Can you separate out the data in any way to show the ripple effect of that billion, Buffalo billion, or the three-quarter in the Tesla plant that may account for the variation in Buffalo versus Rochester, Syracuse, Binghamton, Albany, et cetera? Is that possible?
Mm-hmm. Well, the really interesting thing is that we think of Tesla and Buffalo as being an individual project. But the reality is that it's really tied to an upstate synergy that the state is trying to do. So Buffalo is solar panels, solar tiles, Panasonic working with some batteries connecting all of that. If we go down to Binghamton, which has been having a huge amount of problems, the University of Binghamton is working on very efficient batteries that will go along with our roof tiles and things and allow us to be able to do more work with that. And Rochester's doing more optics work with how with the tiles can we get more energy from the sun if we do that. So if we look at what's going on here now, particularly in this manufacturing area, you can see Rochester continuing what it was doing with both Kodak and Xerox. You can see what we're doing in light manufacturing, and you can see Binghamton doing what they're doing. And the idea would be, hopefully, if this all goes off, if we've rolled the dice this time and we're doing better than we did before, that then all three cities will take off and continue to do that. The example where it didn't work was, why was Albany growing so fast from 1990 to 2008? They bet on nanotechnology, on building wafer chips and computer chips. Buffalo bet on bioinformatics. The problem with bioinformatics is by the time bioinformatics got to Buffalo, it was already a passe industry and it was done. So we bet on the wrong thing. And we paid for it over a number of years. as UB tried to get in and get out of bioinformatics. Now, we still have parts of that here at Roswell and others that we start to see, so it's not like it was a total failure, but it didn't grow the way that nanotechnology grew in both Albany and then Utica.
Great. All right, let's see what this audience has. And we know it's after one, some of you have to leave, you have to do that, but if you can stay for a few minutes, let's, and you can stay for
I can stay for a few minutes.
Good. Thank you. First name.
Dave. Is it a problem if finance is such a big part of the economy, particularly when finance doesn't really create anything?
I mean, it can be, right? I think a lot of what we have to worry about is the reason finance is relatively big here, whether it's M&T or Citi, or even we still even have HSBC jobs here, is that a lot of that is because we're still a low-cost center to do a lot of the backroom work that's going on. So there's not as much of a reason to be here, to lend money out to other manufacturers and things working here. So we need to be careful to diversify our economy so that banks need to be here because this is where they're lending the money, not that we're doing all the work for people who are getting loans in other parts of the country. But yes, in general, if you think about countries that have fallen by the wayside over time, whether it's Great Britain, whether it's the Dutch, whether it's the French, finance becoming a very large part of your economy tends to slow it down and tends to be a leading indicator that your time as the world's leader is starting to come to an end.
I never thought of that correlation like that. I used to think the myth was Buffalo had good savers, and that's why the finance industry prospered, because we didn't spend as much as others, but don't know how true that might have been. Another question here.
Joanne, could you explain somewhat what happens with the your numbers on Buffalo income, but yet our housing is through the roof, and it's so expensive to live downtown now?
Mm-hmm. And also in that explanation include why we would have a different set of measuring tools here compared to other cities, you said, that include those suburbs. Mm-hmm. I don't get that.
Well, let's go with the first question, which is what we're starting to see is what's called gentrification. So you're starting to see families, and not really families, move to downtown Buffalo. So people who would have built their townhouse or built their large mansion in parts of Amherst or Clarence are now looking at the loft apartments in downtown Buffalo, which is starting to have the prices go up. Why? Because we're building all of this new housing. And here's the real interesting question for me and somebody that's on the control board that I worry about, is a lot of younger people are buying these, and what I mean is people in their 30s and early 40s are buying these apartments and condos and other things in downtown Buffalo and raising the price, but they don't have children yet. What's going to happen to these lofts if they start to have children and there's not enough space to have children and do all the things you do? Do they then move out to Clarence, Amherst, Tonawanda, or whatever else? And in the meantime, what happens to the houses that are in Tonawanda and Clarence and everything that these people would have bought that are now, they've left? Are they going to start to fall apart, right? One of the big issues on the east side is if we had done redevelopment 40 years ago on the east side, a lot of that housing stock would be in much better shape, and we wouldn't have to put as much money in to bring it back. So the question is, how much do you knock down? How much do you put in? here as we move around and taste change. So that's partly what's going on, and we're starting to see a small population increase here, but not a large population increase. And if I were doing my best Bruce Fisher imitation, he would say this is still part of the problem of the Rust Belt cities, is we're building all of this stuff for the same amount of people. Shouldn't we realize that we've got to do something with the stuff we already have? And so what you're seeing is a lot of the stuff start to go through the roof, but then if you start to look out in the North Tonawandas, in parts of Marilla and other places where people, that housing price stock is starting to go down. So it's as people move around the area that you're going to get these high bumps and these low changes. It'll be interesting to see in the next few years what happens on the east side, because it seems to be the new sort of hot area where people are trying to buy bargains. And by the way, we're still, even though we talk about being our high prices here, one of the cheapest housing markets in the country. To give you an example, about 10 years ago, Kiplinger's was saying that Buffalo was the highest taxed city in the world. Okay? And here's why. They took our tax rate and applied it to a $300,000 home. And when I was on a radio debate with them and said, well, why did you say the average house in Buffalo is $300,000? And they said, because no house could be cheaper than $300,000. And this was 10 years ago, right? So New York City was a cheap tax place. Tokyo was a cheap tax place. Buffalo is the most expensive tax place in the country, according to them. The second was Duluth, Minnesota. Okay? So we have to be very, very careful. While, yes, our housing prices are going up, compared to a lot of other places, we're still a relatively good deal.
Time for just a couple more questions. Let's raise your hand. I see one here. Anyone else like that? So no one? And again, you can stay for a minute or two.
I can stay. Don't worry.
Come up privately.
I'm fine. Yep.
First name is Doug. I have a clarification and then a question. When you compared an Amazon deal in New York for $3 billion to the Tesla thing, it seems like they're two different things, because in the case of New York City, it's a $3 billion tax break after they bring the jobs and so forth, which is going to create some wealth. Where here, it was actually a government investment to, the money would come to later and the jobs later on. So that's a clarification. My question is, what is the impact of our closeness to Canada and Toronto? Toronto was just booming like crazy. They're bringing in their GO train down the Niagara Falls area. There's discussion of having a commuter rail connecting Niagara Falls and up with Buffalo. What will be the hopefully positive impact of Toronto's success and our proximity to Toronto?
Great questions. I actually was a big proponent of Governor Cuomo buying and producing the building, because if Tesla falls apart, we still own the building. Okay? Then we can go and put something else into it. In a lot of other cases, we've given money to companies and they've run away with our money. You can't run away with the building. Okay? Now, part of the problem is whether or not the equipment that we bought is going to be usable, so we can argue about a lot of their things there. But that's part of the thing with Amazon, too, was they're going to be able to own a lot of this stuff, so there was no guarantee once they got the tax breaks. And the danger with both of these sets of tax breaks is that after 10 years, the tax breaks end, and then they say, fine, we're out of here if you don't give me another 10 years of tax breaks. So we want to be very, very careful about how we give out tax breaks and what we're giving to people, to the extent that we can put that into infrastructure. So Tesla needs to have clean water. They need to have sewage. We need to have roads, and we need to have sidewalks and things built. Those are all fine things for us to do with our state tax dollars, because we need to do them anyway. So I think we have to be careful. But you're right, they aren't exactly the same. But it's the same governor trying to put together some of these types of things and some of these deals that we see. And then what was your other?
Toronto.
Oh, Toronto. Yeah, I think part of the big thing about Toronto is they're the fastest growing community in this hemisphere. So that they're growing by leaps and bounds, and as they come south, right, they're going to come into us, and Buffalo becomes more a suburban economy. Very much like how Buffalo was a suburban economy to New York City when the Erie Canal came in. A little bit slower, a little bit farther away, but part of the reason Buffalo developed the way it did and why we don't have as many national headquarters is because they're in New York City and we're essentially a suburb of New York City. They could just go back and forth. Here's the real scary part. What's going to happen with NAFTA 2? Are there going to be tariffs? What's it going to do to the exchange rate between the two countries? Because we all know by going over the border and back and forth that a lot of Canadians come over here to do grocery shopping at Wegmans. They know more about, you know, Buffalo than some of us know about Buffalo. I was up in Toronto and we were giving a talk and the waitress was telling me that she really likes Trader Joe's and knows exactly how to get there. And she lives in Toronto. But they come down to Trader Joe's. They think that there is no grocery store as good as Wegmans. They all come over here. You know, gas is cheaper here. There are a number of reasons why people come here. But we can ruin that if we start putting tariffs up and there starts to be a trade war between the two countries, let alone the issues of what's going to happen with automobiles, with St. Catharines and Buffalo being mutually working together there. We need to make sure that the autos aren't tariffed and things don't come back, or it could come back to haunt us. Thank you.
Good. All right. Thank you very much. We will. Fred will say our thanks with these note cards from the library, from the World War I exhibit, and our Explore Buffalo book that you might find good for some gifts to youngsters in your family or whatnot. But we thank you for the last minute substitute.
No,
a great substitute. We'll surely have you back in the future and schedule you and discuss that. If that's possible, if you're open to that. That would be
I'm
great.
More than happy to.
Folks, thank you very much. We have let's see, next week, I know from the Community Foundation, Felicia Beard. We had her for a few minutes as part of a panel, and we'll look, she's the Director of Racial Equity Initiatives at the Community Foundation for Greater Buffalo.
What's her topic?
And, I'm sorry?
What's her topic?
You know, it will be talking about what does that mean to be the Director of Racial Equity for a community. What are these terms? What are we trying to accomplish, right? Does the Community Foundation? That's what I hope the topic is. She hasn't told me a different one, so I'll give her some of the microphone to explain terminology, if that makes sense. So, thank you again. We do this because you show up. If anybody hasn't signed, here is the sign-in sheet. If you're getting our emails, great. If not, please leave one. Thanks, folks, for your good support. Smiling faces, sun shining in Buffalo. Little cold, but a great day to be alive in Buffalo. I would say. Thanks, folks. See you next week if possible.
I was there.
Some interesting facts.
Mm-hmm.
I thank you. I have a question. I just thought your presentation was excellent.
Oh, thank you.
Very, very important.
Thank you.
A lot to think about.
This is
so thank you.
Amherst. By a local guy.
Oh,
sorry. We're going to talk about this. I'm giving this out at our local conservation meeting tonight. So it's definitely a plus for us.
Contact is in here.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you. No email address.
Sure.
Maybe on here?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not suggesting that.
That's true.
But I just thought, this is a big improvement.
Oh, I've never seen that.
It's
just brand new.
If what's going to be reversed? Probably some kind of reverse. He got stuck up in Canada. So.